That Sunday, I heard shots fired for the first time. During the whole of the war, I had not heard a single shot. Yet now, when it was over, they began shooting in Berlin. We stood by the open windows in one of our back rooms and heard the faint but distant sounds of spasmodic machine gun fire. I felt uneasy. Someone explained the difference between the sounds of heavy and light machine guns. We tried to guess where the fighting was taking place. The shooting sounded as if it came from the neighborhood of the palace. Was the Berlin garrison defending itself after all? Was the revolution perhaps not going so smoothly? If I had indulged in such hopes, for it will scarcely surprise the reader to hear that I was wholeheartedly against the revolution, they were disappointed the next day. It turned out to have been a rather pointless brawl between rival revolutionary groups, each claiming possession of the royal stables. There was no sign of resistance. The revolution had clearly triumphed. What did that mean? Glorious mayhem, perhaps? Everything topsy-turvy, adventure and colourful anarchy? Nothing of the sort. That same Monday morning, our most feared master, a choleric tyrant with wicked, rolling little eyes, declared that at least here, at school, no revolution had taken place, and discipline would continue to prevail. Doubtless in pursuance of this edict, those boys who had especially distinguished themselves playing revolution during the break were made to bend over and receive a demonstrative beating. All of us who witnessed the punishment felt it as an evil omen. There was something not quite right about a revolution when the next day schoolboys were beaten for playing at it. Nothing could come of such a revolution. Nothing did. Meanwhile, the war was still not quite over. It was clear to me, as to everyone, that the revolution was synonymous with the end of the war, an end that was obviously not the final victory, because the necessary little extra effort had inexplicably not been made. I had no idea what the end without victory would look like. I would have to see it to comprehend it. As the war took place somewhere in distant France, in an unreal world, from which the army bulletins appeared like messages from the beyond, its end also had no reality for me. Nothing changed in my immediate physical surroundings. The event belonged exclusively to the dream world of the great game in which I had lived the last 4 years, a world that had become far more important to me than the real one. On November the 9th and 10th, army bulletins of the usual kind still appeared. Enemy breakthrough attempts repulsed. After courageous resistance, our troops withdrew into previously prepared positions. On the 11th, there was no army bulletin on the notice board at my local police station when I appeared there at the usual time. Empty and black, the board yawned at me. Horror overcame me to think that the board, which had sustained my spirit and nourished my dreams every day for years, would remain empty and black forevermore. I walked on. There must be some news from the front somewhere. If the war was over, and one had to reckon with that possibility, there must at least have been some sort of end worth reporting, something like the final whistle at a soccer match. A few streets away there was another police station. Perhaps there was a bulletin there. There was none there, either. The police had obviously also been infected by the revolution, and the old order had collapsed. I could not come to terms with it. I wandered on through the streets in the fine November drizzle, looking for news. The neighborhood became less familiar. Somewhere, I saw a bunch of people gazing into the window of a newsagent's shop. I joined them and carefully edged my way to the front. There I could read what they were all reading, in silence and gloom. It was an early edition of a newspaper, and it bore the headline, Armistice Signed. Underneath were the terms, a long list. I read them. As I read, I turned to stone. How shall I describe my feelings? The feelings of an 11-year-old boy whose entire inner world has collapsed. However much I try, I find it difficult to find an equivalent in ordinary everyday life. Certain fantastic catastrophes are possible only in dream worlds. Maybe one could imagine someone who, year after year, has deposited large sums of money in his bank, and when one day he asks for a statement, discovers a gigantic overdraft instead of a fortune. But that happens only in dreams. The terms no longer spoke the careful language of the army bulletins. They spoke the merciless language of defeat, as merciless as the bulletins had been when they spoke of enemy defeats. The fact that such a thing could happen to us, not as an isolated incident, but as the final result of victory upon victory, just would not fit in my head. I read the terms again and again, craning my neck as I had done for the last 4 years. At length I withdrew from the crowd and wandered off, not knowing where. My search for news had brought me into a neighbourhood that was almost unknown to me, and soon I found myself in one even less familiar. I drifted through streets I had never seen before. The thin November rain was still falling. Like these streets, the whole world had become strange and unsettling. Apart from the fascinating rules I knew, the great game had clearly had other, secret rules that I had failed to grasp. There must have been something deceitful and false about it. Where could one find stability and security, faith and confidence, if world events could be so deceptive? If triumph upon triumph led to ultimate disaster, and the true rules of history were revealed only retrospectively in a shattering outcome? I stared into the abyss. I felt a horror for life. I do not think the German defeat could have come as a greater shock to anyone than to the 11-year-old boy wandering through those unfamiliar, wet November streets, not seeing where he went or feeling the drizzle gradually drenching him. I certainly do not think it was a greater shock to Corporal Hitler, who at about the same time could not bear to listen to the announcement of the defeat at the military hospital in Pasewalk. He reacted far more dramatically than I. "It became impossible for me," he writes, "to stay on and listen. While all went black again about my eyes, I groped and tumbled my way back to the dormitory, flung myself on my bed, and buried my burning head in the sheets and pillows." Whereupon he decided to become a politician. His gesture was far more childish and self-willed than mine, and not only on the surface. When I compare the deeper conclusions that Hitler and I drew from the same painful experience, the one fury, defiance, and the resolve to become a politician, the other doubt as to the validity of the rules of the game and a horrified foreboding of the unpredictability of life, then I cannot help thinking that the reaction of the 11-year-old child was more mature than that of the 29-year-old adult. Undoubtedly, at that moment it was written in the stars that I could never be on friendly terms with Hitler's Reich.